Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, is in New York, and he spoke at the United Nations at the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty Review.
By enjoying special privileges in the highest global security decision-making bodies and in the IAEA, certain nuclear weapon states widely exploit these platforms against non-nuclear weapon states, contrary to the spirit of the NPT. This unjust practice, repeated over and over, has turned into a pattern. So far, none of the non-nuclear weapon states has ever been able to exercise their inalienable and legal right to develop the peaceful use of nuclear energy without facing pressure and threat at some level.
Also addressing the United Nations conference today, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton.
This morning, Iran's president offered the same tired, false, and sometimes wild accusations against the United States and other parties at this conference. But that's not surprising. As you all heard this morning, Iran will do whatever it can to divert attention away from its own record and to attempt to evade accountability. Ultimately, however, we will all be judged, not for our words, but for our actions. And we will all be measured, not by how assertively we claim our rights, but by how faithfully we uphold our responsibilities. And as the Secretary General said, in this regard, the onus is on Iran. So far, it has failed to meet its burden.
Late this afternoon, I sat down with the President of Iran for a conversation not only about the nuclear issue, but also about the relationship between President Obama and President Ahmadinejad, and how he sees the future of that relationship. Here is that conversation.
What is the status today of the agreement that Iran will send uranium out of the country to Turkey?
Let me give you a short history of an issue on my mind here that also involves our discussion. According to the rules of the IAEA, all member states must give other member states, those who possess it, fuel and the technology for fuel production. This it has to be done without any preconditions. Now, we happen to have a reactor in Tehran that develops medical isotopes that basically meet the needs of 800,000 patients in Iran. It needs a fuel to the grade level of 20%, enriched to the grade level of 20%. Now, our fuel is we're kind of, you know, almost ending. And so we requested the IAEA to provide us with some more fuel. According to the regulations of the IAEA, they have to provide that fuel to us and get paid by us. The IAEA, instead of sending our request to purchase the fuel to all countries, decided to only send the request to two member states, the United States and Russia, and acting against the spirit, the legal spirit of the IAEA, they said that they will give the 20% fuel, but in return demand that Iran give a lower enriched grade fuel to countries abroad as an exchange. And we said, very well. Then negotiations happened, and the negotiations were moving forward, but then some demands were set in place that were not right. We are the ones that want to buy the fuel. We have to have conditions, not those who want to sell it, because those who want to sell it have to provide the fuel based within the framework of the NPT regulations without any preconditions. And they came and said they want an exchange of fuel done. And we said, sure enough, we can do that. But then later on, they came and said that we want Iran's enriched uranium to be brought outside so that Iran moves farther from the ability to build a nuclear bomb. Once that statement was made, the people in Iran felt that there's some insincerity involved, that there's something that's not quite fair about this process. And so they reacted and prevented the process from moving forward. Now, today, we wish to continue with talks, but the agreement that is arrived at has to be mutual, based on mutual exchange. We are agreeing to have an exchange, but not, and we had agreed to it beforehand as well. But again, it has to be a mutual agreement in order to carry out an exchange, not for one group to say, it's either my way or the basically.
So what my understanding was that a representative of your government signed the agreement, your negotiator, for 1,200 kilograms to leave Iran by January 15th to go to Russia. What happened?
Every paper signed by a representative of Iran is acceptable by the Iranian government wherever in the world it's signed. But there was no agreement that was signed.
So you want to today present a counterproposal to Russia and the United States and the IAEA? A counterproposal. What's that counterproposal?
We believe that we can find a middle ground.
What is the middle ground?
We have certain proposals that we have given to some parties involved. Now we have to talk about it and decide on the details. I mean, after all, when I speak of an agreement, we are speaking of two parties and both parties have to agree. Now, some people want to unilaterally impose an agreement on the other. Well, that can't happen.
No,
that's where problems arise.
They want to have a negotiation. They want to have a conversation. They want to move the thing forward. And people in Iran tell me that you want to move it forward. You may have some opposition in your country, but that you would like to see this idea move forward. Is that correct?
Yes. So, and I agree that this should be done.
So how would you do it? Tell us what you would do.
You see, we agreed to send 3.5% enriched fuel to receive 20% and pay for the 20%. But there are some technical details that require the technicians and those who are experts in the field to sit down and talk about and resolve.
Well, has anyone responded to your counterproposal? Where does it stand?
Some have said that we have to sit down and re-engage in talks. There's no other way but to talk. Of course, I'd like to bring your attention to the fact that we are able to produce 20% grade fuel. We don't exactly need it in that sense, but we agreed to accept the exchange idea to engage in cooperation as an introduction for cooperation. It's quite interesting. Some have told us that either you have to engage in an agreement in trade with us, or we'll sanction you. Accept the exchange, or we'll sanction this. Is this the new world order that's in place?
Now,
we happen to have 20% enriched fuel, and we're producing it within the legal framework of international law, and it is only based on the spirit of cooperation that we agreed to their provision to have an exchange. Now, of course, we lost hope, started the production of the 20%.
Here is what Secretary Clinton said. Iran is the only country represented in this hall that has been found by the IAEA Board of Governors to be currently in non-compliance with its nuclear safeguard obligations. The only one. It has defied the UN Security Council and the IAEA and placed the future of the non-proliferation regime in jeopardy, and that is why it is facing increasing isolation and pressure from the international community. But Iran will not succeed in its efforts to divert and divide.
Again, who has said this?
Secretary Clinton.
Oh, Mrs. Clinton. Well, Ms. Clinton says a lot of things. Do I have to have a comment on every statement she makes? Let it be just said that Iran has been the country that has cooperated the most with the IAEA. She can provide some documents and evidence that we have not carried out our obligations within the framework of the agency. We have continued to cooperate with the agency within the legal framework. We have responded to every set of questions they've put before us.
No, but the IAEA says that's not true.
And we have actually received a response back from the IAEA.
They say you have not complied, that you have not allowed them access to see scientists. You have not answered the questions.
This is not the case. The agency makes a claim which is unlawful. Based on its own regulations, no member state can present an allegation against another member state. The agency sent a series of 6 official formal written questions to Iran. Iran responded to all 6 questions and then received a sort of a receipt from the IAEA that they were responded to. Now, the IAEA is, in fact, asking us to respond to the undocumented allegations presented by the U.S. administration, by the U.S. government. This goes far and beyond the framework of the IAEA. We have never committed to the agency that any member state that brings an allegation forward has to be responded to.
But the
and therefore, hence, there's no violation. It is the U.S. government, by the way, mind you, that has had the largest number of violations of IAEA rules.
But the IAEA
The U.S. government has violated this law by alleging that Iran has some activities that are illegal. The Director General itself cannot speak unlawfully within the framework of the IAEA.
It was the IAEA, not the United States, that suggested that you had not and were not in compliance with their request. So what I want to do in this conversation is understand what the president of Iran would do and what he would like to see done to facilitate non-proliferation and to facilitate Iran sending uranium outside of the country to be enriched.
If we did that, do you think all the problems will be resolved? In other words, if Iran sends its uranium abroad for enrichment and that it returns, do you think all the problems are resolved, including all the world problems around us? It's quite clear that Ms. Clinton is an enemy of Iran. Ms. Clinton is an enemy of Iran. It's quite clear from the position she takes. She's always threatened Iran. And the agency does not have any evidence suggesting that Iran has deviated from the legal framework of the IAEA. No documentation. This is a simple political move,
Mr. President,
made under political pressure. I've said that over and over again, Mr. Kalyurov. If we want to resolve this problem, we need to find the root cause of it. We can't make a lot of political noise. We cannot really pose, you know, these kind of political pressures. We must follow justice and law. We want to prevent proliferation. Now, we have to ask ourselves, who are those who proliferate? The very states that possess nuclear weapons. You have to have the weapon to proliferate it. Now, if we want to stop proliferation, the answer is quite simple. Those who possess the bomb have to eradicate it so that proliferation stops. Where else is the bombs being exported around the world from?
The world worries about Iran having the bomb because they think it will set off a proliferation in the region, and that's against everybody's interest. The world would like to convince you that Iran should not want to have the bomb because it's not in the interest of proliferation. The president would like to say to you that they made an agreement with Russia to reduce the number of bombs, you know, and that the president is trying to set in motion non-proliferation, and he's asking you to engage in that. You have said, we don't want the bomb, correct? Categorically, you have said Iran does not want the bomb, correct?
Mr. Rose, if we want to understand the truth, we have to look at it fairly. all our nuclear activities are being watched by cameras installed by the IAEA, all our nuclear facilities. Now, show me one single nuclear facility in the United States that's being that comes under the watch of the IAEA cameras. The IAEA has no inspections over these facilities in the United States. Now, the United States and Russia have sat down and had discussions. Who's going to supervise it? Who's going to make sure it is carried out? What independent, verifiable regime is out there to watch it being happening? They themselves are going to do a certain number of things. Now, perhaps there should be an independent body that can verify what they do. We, in the end of the day, welcome world non-proliferation. We welcome halting of proliferation. We have announced that we are opposed to proliferation. We've carried out our legal duties. Now, what else do we need to do? We are prepared to show the path towards disarmament. We are prepared to sit down and give political assistance, write proposals on how the United States and other nuclear countries that possess a nuclear bomb can disarm. Once they disarm, the solution is there. It's finished. Now, how come is it that those who possess a bomb are not considered a threat, but those that don't have a bomb but may possibly have a bomb in the future are considered a major threat? Now, this is a paradox in and by itself. Nobody can accept this kind of logic, that the international community cannot. And the international community is not summarized by the United States, by being just the United States and its allies. There are 100 NPT or NG8 member states, as well as the OIC member states, who have supported Iran's position. Are they not members of the international community? You see, we oppose the spirit of the word that comes from American politicians thinking that they represent the world, that whatever they say is what the world thinks. This is not the case. You heard my speech today. Some a few people got up and left, those who speak of themselves as representatives of the international community. They were a minority, an absolute minority, and they like to think of themselves as the international community. Now, if we want to fix the world, we have to act fairly. To be fair and just, those who have bombs have to put them aside. That's the end of the story.
So you were saying that the test...
So by alleging that Iran has some problems, you know, America's problems aren't resolved. Just alleging that Iran has problems is not going to resolve Ms. Clinton's problems for her.
With respect to my question, you categorically say that Iran does not want either nuclear weapons or the capacity to make nuclear weapons. Categorically, under no circumstances. You've also said it's against the...
Yes, exactly so. I've said it categorically.
It's against your religion. Yes?
Yes. Yes, it is also against our culture. It is against our beliefs. And we just simply cannot accept to have a nuclear bomb.
Then why is it so hard to cooperate with the IAEA if that is the principle that you act by?
In our eyes, we're cooperating.
But not in their eyes. The
IAEA is that it comes under pressure. What you're saying is because the IAEA comes under the pressure of the United States. They say that themselves. It's quite obvious if you read what comes out of it. How come they don't produce anything against the United States arsenal?
I mean, it's
quite clear that there's political pressure the going out behind, behind this.
You doubted the integrity of Mr. Baradei?
No, not at all.
He was the director of the IAEA.
But when you come under political pressure, you come. It doesn't matter who the position or what the position is. It doesn't mean that just because you're the director general of the IAEA that you can't make mistakes. It's quite clear that you can make mistakes. You see, the question posed is quite clear. The United States has 10,000 nuclear warheads. Is the United States a threat or Iran? Which one is actually the threat? They say Iran may in the future produce bombs. Hence, it is a threat and therefore sanctions are in order. But a country that possesses 10,000 nuclear warheads, has used nuclear weapons in the past, and is threatening to use it again now, today, is not considered a threat. Well, this is a political position. It's not a fair, legal, logical, reasonable position. It's quite clear. It's all politics. Now, just weaving making this into a thick story is not going to help the IAEA. It's quite clear where the threat comes from. The threat comes from the country that possesses the nuclear bomb. The country that possesses it is a threat. It's quite clear.
Okay.
It's quite obvious.
What's quite obvious is that there is not a level of trust between your government and President Obama's government. There is not a level of trust. So I ask you this question. What can be done to create a level of trust? Because Iran is a great nation. The United States is a great nation. Iran has considerable influence in the world. The United States has considerable influence. Where is the trust, and how do you get the trust?
I agree with you. There is no level of trust. Now, this goes back to history, the history of relations between the two countries. I don't want to, however, ponder over history.
Well, we've discussed it before.
You know, our people remember the coup in 1953. Right. For example, or the support of the Shah and the dictatorship that went on before the revolution, the support of Saddam Hussein.
And the Americans remember the hostage taking.
I don't want to go back to history. Under the Bush administration, we tried to talk. As well as under Mr. Obama's administration. But, and we do believe that trust is built through talks and not by clashing and by fighting.
Exactly. So take a step forward. How you...
Allow me. I'm gonna take that step forward and say what you have in mind. When Mr. Obama was elected, I sent him a congratulatory note. That was a very big step. It was an opportunity that he could have responded to in order to pave the way for talks. He didn't respond to the note. When the elections happened in Iran, Mr. Obama supported the people who were setting cars on fire on the streets. Now, that wasn't a good position. Last year, when I was visiting New York, I said that I was ready to talk with Mr. Obama, but he didn't respond. It seems to me that the problem comes from inside America. If you can resolve the problem coming from inside America, the problem between Iran and the United States will be resolved quickly.
Say that again.
I think there's a problem within the inside the U.S. government, the politicians, the statesmen, that somehow somewhat prevents the relations between Iran and the United States to improve. Once that problem is resolved within the United States, the problems between the two countries will be removed. There are a group of radicals in the United States who see their interests in conflicts. Now, allow me. If you may, please. I think that with Mr. Obama in office, the United States has a great opportunity in its hands, perhaps a historical opportunity, perhaps even the last historical opportunity, so that the United States starts improving its relations with the world.
There is some indication the United States is improving its relations with the world.
The United States has to address its problems in Palestine, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, as well as in Iran.
Yeah, but you have to be a contributing factor too, but a positive contributing factor.
We have given Mr. Obama plenty of opportunities, but it seems to me that there's a group that want Mr. Obama to reach a point where instead of cooperating with Iran, he starts entering resolutions condemning Iran. Mr. Rose, I'm telling you as a friend. just a friendly conversation here we're having. I mean, I'm familiar with world affairs, and so are you. Mr. Obama is the biggest and the only and the last opportunity America has for itself. Mr. Obama came with the idea of change, with the motto to change, to build and create change. Where can he build that change? Where? In what corners of the world? In Iraq?
He went to Mr. Obama went to Cairo, and Mr. Obama went to Cairo and made a speech about the world, and he reached out to the Islamic world.
Allow me, please.
But allow me make one other point before you do. Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Charlie Rose, things are not resolved with one speech. A speech has to lead to action. Action. Mr. Obama said that I want to create change, that this change must present itself, must show itself in Iraq. It must show and happen in Afghanistan. It must show and happen in Palestine. It must show with regards to Iran. Now, please pay attention. I'm trying to help here. I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help America. Here. Those who are behind the scenes or within the U.S. administration, in the Obama administration, are moving things in a direction which will make Mr. Obama to take radical positions, especially with respect to Iran. Some members, the permanent members of the U.N. Security Council, are also doing the same thing, leading Mr. Obama to a position that is irreversible vis-a-vis Iran. As soon as Mr. Obama enters into a series of behaviors that resembles Mr. Bush's behaviors, two things will happen. First, Mr. Obama's time is over. In other words, when Mr. Obama becomes radical in his behavior, what that means is that there's no change, and therefore he has been defeated. He has failed. And his presidential term will be not useful. Secondly, America's most important, biggest historical opportunity will be lost, and America will no longer be able to improve itself in the world. I'm saying this as a person who sympathizes, who is just expressing what he sees. They're constantly instigating. Over and over again, I've said I'm ready to speak with Mr. Obama. Well, what happened? He's never responded.
Can you clarify one historical point for me? Did the President Obama send a letter to the Supreme Leader of Iran?
You should ask that from Mr. Obama.
Well, what do you know?
Well, you and I should speak about our own affairs.
I ask you an honest and sincere question. How do you build trust? And your answer had to do with accusing the United States of things and saying that this was the last chance for the United States as a nation. It's not. The United States is the longest democracy in history. It's not the last chance. President Obama is part of a continuum of democratic elected presidents, which will continue after him. But you're important, and this is a time for trust to be done, and it has to have a give and take. I'm asking you what you want the president to do and what you're prepared to do in response. It's that simple.
Can you tell me what have they given us so far for us to give something back? What have they given us so far?
They've made offers to
What offers? What offers? Can you tell me, specify? You're saying that we should give something to get something. Well, what have they given us so far?
What have you given them?
Are our eastern borders any safer today?
No.
U.S. forces have increased in number in Afghanistan.
Do you fear?
Are our western borders any safer today? Well, the Americans are in Iraq still. Is Persian Gulf now free of American troops? Exactly what has it that they've given us? I mean, you're a member of the media, you must know. What have they given us, and what in return are they expecting? They haven't given us anything.
They have reached out. The president said to you, he was holding his hand out, and would you like to unclench your... He said, I'm holding my hand out. Would you like to unclench your fist and shake hands? That's what he asked. He was prepared to say, let's... And so...
This is just words, Mr. Rose. It's just a posture. Instead of that, I sent a message. I sent a written letter saying that I'm really, truly extending my hand to him. And I sent a message saying that we are prepared to cooperate in the following fields that I expressed in the letter. So we've been a step ahead. We're, in fact, a step ahead. Nothing has been given to Iran, except that a hand has been extended. So we extended it earlier. We extended it many times before.
You are concerned about sanctions. It's not just the United States that's talking about sanctions. It's Europe, it's Russia, it's many people are talking about
sanctions. We are not concerned of sanctions. With respect, we are not concerned with sanctions. Sanctions cannot be implemented. In the world of free trade, what does sanctions mean?
You're not worried about sanctions.
No, we're not. Sanctions are unimportant to us. We're saying that clash is bad, conflict is bad. We're not even speaking of sanctions. We're speaking of a world filled with friendship. We're saying that this is what goes against what we want. Otherwise, there have been 3 sanction resolutions that have passed already, but we're still alive, we're still going on living, going on with our life, and I'm still sitting here, and despite 3 sanctions, so it can be a problem.
And you have solidified your support in some cases. Speaking of that, how is your economy today? Your economy?
It's good. It's good. Yes, it's better than the economy here in the United States, because in the past 3 years of economic crisis, we've had a positive economic growth. The volume of our trade is not anywhere close to the volume of trade the United States has. The volume of your trade is much larger, but in world crisis, in a global crisis, when your economy was going down, our economy was still showing a positive trend, because our economy is indigenous, is based on Iran's own internal resources primarily.
Yeah.
It is not based on other global resources. We don't really have a major problem. Don't worry about us. And we don't worry about sanctions either. We're worried that opportunities for creating a better world and world peace are getting lost.
But why are you attacking the United States all the time then?
We're defending.
No.
We are constantly defending ourselves.
What?
Mr. Bush, how many threats? And we kept defending ourselves. Where exactly have we attacked?
Mr. Bush is no longer president.
Allow me, Mr. Charlie Rose. Are there Iranian forces around U.S. borders, or are there American troops around Iran's borders?
There are American troops.
Are we the ones who are attacking? Are we the ones who are attacking?
Not attacking Iran.
Where have we attacked?
Are American troops attacking Iran? Are American troops attacking Iran?
Allow me, Mr. Bush. 4 times officially threatened Iran with a military attack. 4 times. And his policy, declared policy, was regime change in Iran. He said it officially many times.
Mr. Bush is no longer president. You need to stop suggesting that there is no difference between President Obama and President Bush. You say that all the time.
No. I'm saying, in fact, that there's a difference between them. Okay. I'm saying there is a difference. Since Mr. Obama resumed office, we have welcomed it. We've welcomed him. We've said we're ready to help him. If Mr. Obama wants to create change, we're ready to help. We said in Iraq, if you want to change, we're ready to help. We said in Afghanistan, if you want to change, we're ready to help. We said in Palestine, we'll help. Mr. Obama did not make any changes in the Iraq policy. Well, he didn't. He probably doesn't doesn't need our help in Iraq, I suppose.
No, no, he does.
No, I mean, if somebody doesn't need your help, do you insist on giving it to them?
The possibilities of cooperation between Iran and the United States would make the world a better place. A better place.
I accept that. I agree.
You know,
and, I agree.
And,
I accept
and the United
that.
States is saying, you know, please, Mr. President, you know, don't engage in developing the capacity to have nuclear weapons.
Are you saying it, or is the United States saying that?
No, I'm saying what?
Are you saying that Iran should not increase its ability to develop nuclear weapons, or is
yes.
the U.S. government saying that?
I think the United States. That's
why
the,
would we want nuclear weapons?
I know, but you need to convince the world. You don't need to convince the United States. You need to convince the world. You need to convince the international. You need to convince the Russians, the International Intelligence Agency, the Turks. You need to convince the Europeans, and you need to convince the Chinese.
Mr. Charlie Rose. Do you see the world as the summary of these few countries? That's wrong. Just for five countries to call themselves the owners of the world is wrong in the first place. We don't even believe in that. This is a major difference we have with them, and they have to accept that. They have to sit down and talk with us about it. We can't believe that the world is summed up by five states. The rest of the world has issued declarations in our favor. If we go on like this, nothing's resolved. Where does America's problems lie? Where does its problems lie? I want to tell me. I mean, let me just set your mind. I want to give your mind some rest here. We are opposed with the bomb, the nuclear bomb, and we will not build it. If we want to build it, we have the guts to say it. We're courageous enough to say it because we are not afraid of anyone. If we want to bomb it, have the bomb, we'll come and tell everyone we want to build it. We're not afraid of anyone if we want to make it. Who's there to be afraid of? But so when we say we don't want it, we don't want it. Now, if you want to engage in political games with us, the agency, this, that, there, that's not going to resolve anything. You see, no, please, let's settle this. This is not going to resolve anything. Now, Ms. Clinton might say, make 2,000 more speeches. That's not going to resolve
anything. But your speech is...
Iran is not going to be harmed by those statements. Not Iran. It's America that will lose its opportunities. Exactly how, what harm will that bring to Iran? We've lived under American pressure for 30 years, and it's only made us stronger.
Before you leave New York, present a program to the United Nations and the IAEA and the United States and others of, one, your commitment not to have a nuclear weapon, and then present a program to the United States as to how you would like to create trust and credibility, how you would like to see the United States develop the same kind of relationship with Iran that it developed with China. You could do that by reaching out. The initiative is there. How do you take steps to create an engagement, which is you take the initiative?
We've given the U.S. government many opportunities that it didn't want. Political issues are there. We know that. It's called politics. They've been our enemy for 30 years. It's nothing new. We don't care. We think that if they want to get into a level of cooperation with us, they have to be sincere. Those who want to carry, if they want to carry double standards, we want to hold a stick over Iran's head and then give a carrot out to them, this is kind of like not an issue, not a policy posture that can resolve anything. It's not a humane policy to begin with. What is humane is based on justice. Whatever there is, put it on the table to discuss sincerely. Let's put everything on the table. Let's respect each other for a change.